The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
It's the end of the month and end of the quarter. Markets zigging and zagging. Big cap leaders changing direction. All this and much more on episode number 554 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello, it's Andrew Horowitz, and welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast for the first day of April 2018. Happy Passover, happy Easter for all of you celebrating these wonderful holidays. It's the start of spring, really, getting into the nice weather for most of the southern part, of course, of the United States, and kind of trickling up soon. Don't worry, it will be summer, and we'll be able to get outside for all of you that have been locked inside for this wintertime. I had an interesting Passover. We had about 29 people over the house, and we started out with a homemade plum brandy that I made. Each year, since I remember going back to my grandfather, we had a tradition in my house to start the Seder, start the Passover festivities with a quick shot of something called Schlivovitz. This is a plum brandy. It's 100 proof. It's very intense. It goes down like a grappa. It goes down hot. You know, it really kind of wakes you up. Starts the Seder, starts the evening. And for a long time, I was wondering, you know, why do we always do that? I don't remember anywhere else seeing this written down as a tradition. And I realized that with all the people in your house and all your family spending the evening over, probably starting off with a shot for everybody around the table is not the worst idea in the world. So what I decided to do, because I had tried several different brands of this, and they all have the same basic flavor. It's this hot, fiery, very dry and intense 100 proof or so brandy. I said, you know what? I'm going to make my own this year. So back in October, got a quick recipe. It's not so hard. You put in a ball jar, put some plums and you score them. You put some cinnamon sticks and you put an orange peel, you a bunch of sugar. You fill it up with Everclear grain alcohol. You rotate it every day for about 2 weeks. Then you throw it in a closet for a few months. And we opened this up, and I got to tell you, it was pretty good. It was thick. It wasn't as hot and fiery as the traditional Schlivovitz. It was more of a smooth, sweet brandy flavor. Pretty strong, of course, because Everclear is, I think, what is it, 180 proof? 90% alcohol. But it was great. I mean, everybody really enjoyed it, and that we made that on our own and had that going. So now I'm getting requests for people to make more of it. So we're going to have Horowitz Hooch. I guess we'll have some of that made, but it was kind of fun. I encourage you all, if you haven't made your own brandies or liquor of any sorts, it's really not that hard, and it's kind of fun to do. Anyway, this week I was also the guest of Frank Curzio on his podcast, Wall Street Unplugged. You can find that over on, just search for Frank Curzio and my name. Say, you know, just do a search for Andrew Horowitz, Frank Curzio. We talked about a lot of different things. We talked about market structure. We talked about a variety of different stocks. We talked about what's happening with many of the current conditions that we're seeing out there from an economic standpoint. Central banks really hit on a lot of different areas. And you know, Frank really provided a good amount of insight as well, because a lot of people are asking questions. You know, what's going on? Why are markets behaving this way? Why are we seeing this incredible amount of volatility? One of the stocks I talked about was U.S. Steel, and I sent up a chart on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Horowitz. And one of the things that I noticed about U.S. Steel after the tariffs went into place, or at least first, actually, when they were first announced, it shot up. U.S. Steel really rocketed higher. And then when the realization was that well, maybe these tariffs aren't as stiff as was expected. And we had a variety of countries carved out and excluded from any tariffs. U.S. Steel kind of starts sagging and sagging more. And it moved down pretty significantly. I looked at a chart of this and I started seeing a very clear potential for a head and shoulders pattern that was developing where we see a left shoulder that looks pretty well developed, a head that looks somewhat developed as well, and now a right shoulder that is starting. Now, if in fact we do see that this is a, you know, textbook case of a head and shoulder pattern, the potential is that we'll see another rise into the height of the left shoulder. And then from there, it's all over. But that means there is the opportunity to make some money from where it was at the baseline of the previous shoulder. So if you think about that and just picture that in your head for one moment and think about that level that can kind of build that right shoulder now, well, we have it till about $40 per share approximately on U.S. Steel, symbol X, that we have to move up to. And right when we looked at this and right when we initiated this trade, and I also mentioned it on Curzio's podcast, it popped about 4.5%. So far, the pattern is in fact playing out. Of course, some of that has to do with the fact that the markets moved up on Friday right into the end of the year. Low volume, not a lot of participation, but still it did move up to recoup some of the losses. But we did see that even with that move on Friday, that market indices did close in the red for the second month in a row. So that's kind of interesting to see that we came from, I mean, such an amazing January, right? We'll talk about that in a second, though. I also discussed a few short names that we had on our radar on Curzio's show. One of them was Twitter, which we actually closed, and I mentioned we just closed it, I think just before we talked about it on his show, for about a 15% gain for portfolios, for client portfolios on the TDI Managed Growth Strategy. Macy's also, we closed that position. It was not really behaving well when we expected. We saw some consumer spending down and a few other things that really, we didn't expect to see Macy's do very well, and it held really well. It started moving higher. So we closed that position for about a 2% gain, but we're going to be looking to re-enter those two positions and a few others. But those are just some ideas that we had discussed on Curzio's show last week. So if you have the opportunity to listen into that discussion, I encourage you to do so because I thought it was a pretty good discussion. Frank Curzio does speak rather quickly, so you may have to slow down the speed on your playback. Definitely not at 1.5 or 2 times speed to listen to what he's talking about. But what about these markets? I mean, the change that we've seen has been pretty impressive. Remember January? Just looking back a couple of months ago, coming off a great year in 2017, January comes around and we're off to the races. Everything seemed just hunky-dory. Economics were good. The Fed was going to raise maybe 3 times throughout the year. We had a new Fed chair that looked to be rather dovish. We have these new tax cuts that are going into play with corporations and benefit to the individuals by giving them a break as well. And everything looked pretty good. Bond yields were rising a bit, but okay, it wasn't terrible. The dollar had been coming down. That's good for our multinationals. Around the world, economics were still doing very well and continued to do well. And everything was pretty much thumbs up. And all of a sudden, just out of nowhere, switching on a dime, sentiment changed. And then we get a level of volatility that was much different than we were used to over the last couple of years. And even just looking back to 2017, where we saw volatility just evaporate. And then out of nowhere, there's crazy volatility, movement on markets that we hadn't seen. And daily ranges that were enormous. It was like all of a sudden somebody just threw a cold, wet rag on the markets and everybody said, all right, things are different now. Different mode, volatility up. No longer is this a simple game of simply just investing and just letting it ride, because now all of a sudden, I mean, it's different. It feels different. It looks different. There's something changed in what's going on. And that's how it happens, by the way. Things change very quickly when it comes to markets. What we were used to for some time couldn't last. Let's be honest. Did anybody really think that the lack of volatility, the historically low volatility and the tight ranges that we had seen for some time were going to be there forever? Just like if you see massive volatility to a point that it's you know, 1,000-point swings on a regular basis, will that last forever? No. Things get back to normal. 2017 was not normal. It was not a normal condition for markets. Now, maybe we're overshooting on the volatility side, and maybe the ranges are a little bit wider than they should be on a daily and weekly basis. But I got to tell you something. This is exactly how it happens. It happens very quickly. Sentiment changes. And then all of a sudden, you're in an entirely different market condition and you need to adapt. And that's an important issue right there. It's really important to recognize when things change. And they can change quickly in both directions, back and forth. But you need to be aware of the fact that if you stick to your old ideas that are based on data and information that is outdated, that you are going to be in trouble. Your portfolio is going to be in trouble. So just be aware to take notice. Every once in a while, step back and try to clear yourself, clear your head, clear your ideas and say, okay, is the information that I believe to be true actually what's happening? So for example, if you are wildly bullish and you believe that the markets will continue higher without any interruption, where you should in fact be a little bit more or less bullish, let's say, and things are not going the way that they should be, and you continue to be bullish, and you continue to be wildly bullish, and you can continue to maybe buy on leverage, and you're getting wrecked, realize that while you may be right in the long haul, it is possible that you may not be as well. And therefore, you need to change. Maybe you get off leverage when market conditions are not so inviting. Maybe you need to take some positions off or possibly move into different sectors or possibly even move into cash for a while. Now, again, market timing is very difficult. We know that. And in fact, for the most part, if you let your emotions drive your market logic, you're probably apt to lose. But there is something to be said about, at the same time, putting some protection into your portfolio on a regular basis to make sure that even if you are right over a 10-year period, the fact is that over the next year, let's say, if things don't go your way and all of a sudden you then make very bad decisions because you're in such a hole, for example, that you don't go back to your play after 10 years, you have money at least to work with. So I guess what I'm saying is that while I'm very hesitant to give you market timing advice or even to tell you that market timing should be utilized, what I'm saying to you is look at market structure, look at market conditions to make sure that your thesis on what you're doing is right and come up with a game plan to make sure that if you're not right, you have alternatives. There's plan B, plan C, plan D, that you have the ability to weave in and out of market conditions appropriately. So if in fact you get moved out of a position because you hit a stop, for example, that you say that, you know what, I have a preset stop of 15% on this position, and if it gets to that point, I'm out, or I have a 20% upside on this position that I believe it will get to. When it gets there, I will take part of the position or all the position out. And if you're wrong, give yourself an alternative. The alternative is, okay, if I'm wrong about this, what am I going to do? And one of the greatest things that you could do and probably benefit yourself as an investor and for your portfolio is to simply write things down. Keep not only notes, but directives. if-thens. If the market does this, then I'm going to do that. If I am wrong about this, then I will do that. If I believe a stock is going to come down and I'm willing to buy it at 30, it's at 35, and I really like this name, but I want to buy it a little bit lower at 30 for whatever reason. If it comes down to 32 and turns around and all of a sudden there is this upside move, then what I'm going to do is change my mind about this because I do want to catch this for the long haul because I really believe in what they're doing and the company and the management, their growth growth outlook, their potential for what they're doing. Be flexible. If you are one of these people that gets yourself dug in, and there's plenty of those, by the way, on the bearish side, that they get themselves so stuck in their ways that they won't ever invest. Now, let me tell you something. I can tell you that if you're not invested in the market, you're not going to lose. How's that? Pretty simple. Think about that, right? Simple. If you don't invest, you can't lose. However, if you don't invest, you can't profit either. If you're not investing because you believe that the market's overvalued, there's something fundamentally wrong, the economics are a problem, we're going to go into a recession, all those things that maybe make up the list of reasons why, in fact, you are not going to be investing and you just sit it out, okay, that's fine. But if you really believe it, if you really believe what you're saying to yourself here and all the information that you've reviewed is telling you this, then why aren't you going short and looking to profit on the short side? If you believe, well, you know what? I don't like how things are going in Europe and look at all these protests around the United States and all this and that. But you're missing the idea that companies continue to make money and there's a lot of things that are underlying the economy that are good. And you're sitting on the sidelines and you're not believing it because you just don't want to believe it because your overview of what's happening is somehow slanted by maybe, I don't know, maybe some media that you're reading. You're dealing with confirmation bias issues. We talked about that a few times over the last year. And you're not investing, but yet everything is making money. And you keep on saying to yourself, oh, it's a sugar high. It's artificial. It's Fed-induced. It's not real. Well, I'm going to tell you something. As much as you want to say that, doesn't mean that it's true. Doesn't mean that what's actually happening and what the belief by the masses are much different. You know, if there's 100 people in a room and you're the only one that's right, you're wrong. Because what's happening in the markets is it is a crowd mentality. And that's why, by the way, sometimes you can see this major turn at any moment, either to a positive bias or a negative bias to markets. Crowds do change their direction, change their discussion, their way of thinking, their sentiment very quickly at times. And this is why we saw the massive change from where we had just this glorious look of the markets and everybody was happy and the crowds were cheering in January to what we saw happen in February and March. Now the Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 2.5% for the year at the end of the close of the first quarter. S&P down 1.2%. The NASDAQ 100 still up, but came down significantly from where it was, up 2.3%. Bitcoin down 50%. That was a high flyer that everybody was all excited about. Nobody's talking about it anymore, besides CNBC. They seem to have a total infatuation with it. But for the most part, we're seeing that it's being sold up pretty significantly, dipped down, I think, about $6,500 over the weekend. VIX is up 81% year-to-date at the close of the quarter, and crude oil up 7.7% when nobody thought it would go past $40 only 6 months ago or so, or maybe even a little bit longer than that, but people were swearing that we'll never see $50 in their lifetime. And meanwhile, crude seems to be popping on a regular basis due to all sorts of issues. So what happened? What's going on with this change of sentiment? And why is it that all of a sudden it seemed to come out of nowhere? Or did it? We discuss this on the DH Unplugged show. We do this every Tuesday night. over on dhunplugged.com. You can get it also, of course, on iTunes and all these great other podcast applications and marketplaces. But John C. Dvorak and myself, we spent some time talking about this massive headline overload that we saw over the last couple of months. In particular, in the last couple of weeks, we saw the Fed and a big issue with regard to, you know, how they're going to handle what they're seeing now with the taxes and how that's going to be increasing earnings and potentially spending and GDP and all the things that were being priced into the markets. And then we saw in Washington the talk of tariffs and changes of personnel at the White House, as well as a constant barrage of tweets and infighting between the Democrats and the Republicans and just all the things that are going on. It seems rather messy in Washington, even though it's usually pretty messy, no matter who's at what post. We saw the situation in Europe with the ECB talking about how great things were and the potential for them to take their foot off of the gas pedal when it comes to their various programs related to quantitative easing and low interest rates. China, retaliatory tariffs, possibly slowing down a little bit, and a new premier, president, emperor, leader, whatever you want to call him at this point, for life. Too much information for markets to digest as quickly as it came out. Trying to understand the dynamics of how this changes what they thought was a relatively smooth backdrop of just, you know, central banks hanging in there and priming the markets and these taxes in the United States really helping out corporate earnings and a low dollar helping out the multinationals and nothing changing, everything staying, and all of a sudden just a lot of things that came in the middle of all this. And that's why sentiment changed so dramatically, because now people don't really understand how to price in what's going on. So when you have some confusion, markets hate that. Markets absolutely abhor confusion and uncertainty. Two words that you just don't want to be involved with. And this uncertainty about, you know, what's happening in government in terms of who's in, who's out, what they're going to be looking at and either attacking or building. You have direct comments from President Trump recently about Amazon. That was just a couple days ago and over the weekend, about them ripping off the U.S. Postal Service and potentially underpaying taxes. And, you know, those kind of remarks from the president directly about a company doesn't help that company, right? Now, whether or not it's actually something that really needs to be considered or something that was just said in a way to, you know, as a wake-up call or whatever it may be, the fact is that when you have a president directly focusing in on a specific company, you know, that investors get spooked. And when that company is Amazon, that is one of the largest companies that is out there from a capitalization standpoint. And when we look at markets that are based on the capitalization, the size of the companies in them. In other words, you have the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ that are cap weighted. The larger the company, the more weighting they have in that particular index. And therefore, when those large companies or this large company falls, it takes down the entire index. Now, maybe the underlying stocks don't do as poorly, but if you have a company that has, let's say, I'm just taking a number, 5 or 6% weighting, and they're down 15 or 20%, think about that. That takes down the market, you know, 80 basis points. Maybe 1%. And then when you have other companies like Facebook, another large one, and Google, and you see the issues related to the privacy, you know, this really something that's there that needs to be reckoned with. And these ideas of what's happening right now with Facebook as an example, and this privacy issue is probably something that's going to linger around for a little while longer. And what does that mean? Well, there's an unknown, remember that word, unknown, uncertainty, about how this is going to impact earnings. And with valuations on some of these names on the higher side of things, interest rates potentially rising due to the Fed, there may be some, you know, ongoing weakness in the growth side of things. Now, what we've seen in the past is, yeah, you know, everybody's like, okay, where's the hot sectors? Tech. Okay, what else? Well, maybe biotech. You know, clearly growth was a major leader for some time. And obviously the names that we mentioned, you know, the Amazons, Facebooks, Googles, Apples, these are the names that really have the largest component of the indices. And as such, one of the reasons that the indices have been doing so well for so long is because money just keeps on flowing into these names. Now, as money starts to flow out, as we have seen, it creates a significant amount of problem for the rest of the index. And it just takes down everything, especially because of something we've talked about several times, that there is a major amount of passive investing going on with ETFs. And when you're looking, you're saying, well, you know, I really like the whole tech side of things. I'm going to invest in the triple Qs. Instead of trying to pick one name, what happens? Well, money goes in and flows in, and it builds up all the underlying stocks in that index. Man, this is something we talked about. Once money starts flowing out and people saying, wait a minute, a large component of this index are these massive names, the ones that we're concerned about, maybe by overvaluation or possibly some regulatory concerns. And they say, you know what, I maybe am going to take my money out of the queues. Well, it just doesn't affect necessarily those names that they're thinking about that may hold the top positions. It affects the entire index. It affects the entire ETF. And that's why we're seeing what we're seeing. This is my biggest concern that I've talked about with ETFs. Now, not my biggest concern, but my biggest concern with ETFs, that you're seeing exactly what we had talked about. We also talked about this idea that, you know, maybe that we saw such a divergence of returns over the last year and a half towards the growth side of the equation. And again, growth is the names that have the potential for better earnings growth in the future, that really valuations are a bit higher because the expectations for growth are higher. And you have some consumer discretionary and technology and healthcare and those in that quadrant. And then you have the value side, which are more the companies that, you know, are your blue chips possibly, or at least those names that are not related to go-go earnings growth, but maybe solid companies that have good earnings over time. You know, those that pay dividends, utilities, staples, real estate possibly. And we made the decision back in, you know, towards the beginning of the year, that with the outperformance that we saw in growth and the significant outperformance, that there was the potential to see a mean reversion, a movement back towards normalization. And what would that mean and what would that look like? Well, that would be that growth would actually start to lag a bit and value would start to pick up. And we started to work on slanting the large cap positioning for client portfolios, those in the global allocations and Investology, not all portfolios, but across most of them. So for example, if there was a 10% holding in large cap growth that we would allocate, again, just as an example, and we said, well, okay, what we want to do now is, instead of being in a core position, which is technically a 50-50 value versus growth, we're going to slant that maybe 60 or 70% towards value and the remainder in growth. So from a 50-50, slanting it and over investing in the value side, looking for this catch-up trade to happen. Now, growth is still leading value this year. However, over the last few weeks, there's been a material change. So the question is this going to resolve that growth is going to continue its outperformance, or are we going to see that value is going to start to pick up? And with all of the headline risk, volatility, and everything that we've seen recently, is there a potential that there's going to be the opportunity for people to be looking for less risk in their portfolio, but still wanting to hold quality and looking to move from the growth, which potentially could be overvalued if we consider a significant amount of rate increases and volatility in the markets, moving into more of a value positioning? Now, for those of you that maybe have not seen these kind of things happen in the past, There have been several times historically that we've seen an outperformance of one side versus the other. Very similar to when you can see an outperformance of, let's say, bonds versus stocks, or large cap versus small caps, or domestic versus international. There are times that there are these incredible periods where you see outperformance of one in a significant manner, not just, oh, one's up 5% for the year, the other's up 6. I'm talking about one up 20% and one up 3% in a good year. And there have been times that this has happened, many times this has happened. When you look at the variance of returns of two positions against each other. And what happens over time is it usually lasts a while because the momentum is in there, or there's maybe fear, and then it turns and you get back to more normal levels where you have an even distribution over time. And what that means is usually the position that has been underperforming catches up significantly, either through a move by one of the overperforming position significantly underperforming, or the underperforming position significantly outperforming. So that's something that we talked about a few times, and just something for you, you know, just to consider. All right, mention real quickly here the Benzinga Award. I mentioned this before. Benzinga is having a company called Benzinga. So they're out of Detroit. Great news source. They have live feeds. They have research. Just a whole vast information portal is available. Benzinga. Well, I think I mentioned this before, but I'm going to mention again that on May 15th and 16th. They're holding the 2008 Benzinga Awards, the FinTech Awards. They're going to bring together the best and brightest in FinTech. They're going to be leaders from banks and digitalization efforts, founders of influential startups and VCs, and other FinTech decision leaders will be there. You got companies like Facebook and Citi and IBM, Foursquare, PayPal, Zelle, Ripple. They're all going to be there. They're going to share their insights on panels, networks, keynote presentations, et cetera. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there actually with a full podcast rig, and we're going to be interviewing a lot of the speakers and people that are very influential in the area of FinTech. So you're going to have the opportunity to listen to that once that's done, but also the opportunity to be there live while this is all going on. So if you want to do that, we're going to have a link on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. There's a square on the right-hand side there on the sidebar. It's just a little picture of the Benzinga FinTech Awards. If you do want to come, you can sign up there. There's a discount code available for my listeners, and that's use the word Horowitz. So apply the discount. When you go into the registration, just click on promo code, put that in, and you can see the pricing of what it is, et cetera. So we're going to try to see if we can get together with if time is available. There's a lot of things going on day and night for me there, and involved in a few of the different activities and programs. But if there is time in New York City on May 15th and 16th, we're going to try to see if we can get together with a few people, have a couple of drinks, spend a little time. If you are interested in going to that, make sure to go over to the Benzinga FinTech Awards, use the code Horowitz. If, in fact, you do want to get together, and let's say that's going to be on the night of the 15th, the 14th or 15th, I'm not quite sure yet. I'll be in there a little bit early. So if you do want to get together, maybe we form a little meetup. Do me a favor. Send me an email. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Go to Ask Andrew and tell me that you're interested. If there's enough people to get together, we will definitely make something happen in New York City, in Manhattan, one of those nights. So let me know about that. And I know we have some people that have some great places that we can go to and check out. Okay. Now, let's for a moment go, maybe it's not in the right order here for this, but I wanted to just do a quick review of what we saw from an economic standpoint last week and what we have looking forward to next week. So last week, there was a few things that stuck out to me that were, I thought was kind of interesting. So we saw the consumer confidence came out, and that was, again, another very, very high level. We saw that it was 127.7. Now, it was a little bit lighter than it was in the previous month, in just 1 month ago was 130 and, or excuse me, it was 130 even. And this time it was 127.7. Still very high confidence. That's good. We saw that the Case-Shiller home price, 20 city came out, and this is a calculation of a year-over-year gain in housing prices over 20 city area. And that was up 6.4%. And what that's showing us is that housing prices are still doing pretty well. The recovery is ongoing when it comes to housing. We also saw that GDP came in the third estimate for quarter four 2017, and it originally was 2.3%. And I believe this came out at 2.3, then it was 2.7. The third estimate came out at 2.9%. So that's good, getting close to that 3% number that everybody's all excited about. So that's kind of a good sign that the economy is still rolling along pretty well. We did see on Thursday, though, something that I thought was pretty, was interesting in that it was very hard to explain. In that we saw that personal income, now again, this is on the heels of some really good consumer confidence numbers, better paychecks for people, you know, people benefiting from the taxes and the economy doing well, et cetera. We saw that personal income came in as an increase of 0.4% on a month-over-month basis, okay? Personal spending came in at 0.2%. Now, let me just make sure we're clear about something. Personal income keeps rising. Personal spending seems to be stagnating. And I asked this question on Twitter. I said, what's going on here? You know, we should be seeing that retail sales are a little bit better. There's high confidence. People are, you know, feeling pretty good. And we have more money. The usual course is that you would see that personal spending would be going higher. In fact, what we're seeing is savings are creeping up. Now, maybe people are finally getting the idea that it's important to save. Maybe. But historically, we've known that when people have more money in their pocket, the first thing they do is pretty much spend it, right? I don't know about you. I got a couple extra bucks in my pocket. What do I do with it? Let me go to the bank and put it away in savings. No, I mean, you save through your 401k plan. You save usually in bigger swaths of money that you have predetermined. A couple extra bucks here and there, though, probably going to end up being spent. But for whatever reason, it's just not happening. Again, we saw even the Michigan sentiment come out. The final number for March was 101.4, a little bit lower than it's been, but in the hundreds is a really, really high number. It's a really good level. We have more people working. We have more business hiring. But yet, again, spending's down. A little bit of a quandary there. Now, coming up next week on Monday, we have the ISM index coming out, the manufacturing index. Expectations are for about a 59.5. Prior was 60. So we're still in good shape there if it comes in that range. We also have on Tuesday auto sales and truck sales. And those have been kind of all over the place, actually. But we're seeing that there is a slight slowdown in auto sales over time, the last year and a half or so. So I don't think anybody's really too concerned about that. Factory orders are coming out on Wednesday, along with ADP employment. ADP employment change is expected to see 210,000 new jobs added to the private payrolls, which is pretty much in line with what we've seen in the 220-30 range. So expectations are 210,000. And this is building up to the end of the week, of course. We have the official numbers. ISM services, which is a bit more important, I think, than the ISM index himself, because we have about 70% of our economy is related to services. Services are expected to be somewhere probably in the 59 range, which is, again, consistently with where they've been for some time. So all told, so far, I don't see any major problems unless we see some really bizarre numbers next week. Thursday trade balance, initial claims, continuing claims. But Friday, we're going to see the non-farm payrolls. I feel like we just did this like 2 weeks ago. But non-farm payrolls are coming out on Friday. Expectation is for us to have a build of about 175,000. Don't forget that last month we saw 313,000 added to the payrolls. The unemployment rate currently at 4.1%, expected to dip down to 4%. Average hourly earnings are expected to rise slightly. Average work week is expected to stay consistent at 34.5. So there's some pretty important things coming out next week. Now, assuming we don't get any crazy headlines coming out, again, some of the things that we've seen on the last couple of weeks have been really moving markets pretty dramatically, assuming, which is a big assumption here, large leap. And I don't think probably going to happen, by the way, because I do think that for whatever is going on right now, there is a desire to shake things up. And whether it's the news that, well, putting the kibosh on the South Korea deal until we get finished with North Korea, or whether it's going to be another slam on, you know, on Amazon, or maybe this concern about this latest headline, well, Walmart is looking to buy Humana, and there could be some, I don't know, maybe some antitrust issues going on there, but something's probably bound to break throughout the week. Let's just say that. It's pretty much the sun's going to rise. We're going to see some headlines. And some of them are good, but some of them could be market moving in a positive manner or in a negative manner. So just keep on your toes for that. But realize that we have a pretty busy week when it comes to economics next week. And that is really probably the most important things you want to look at right now, because a lot of this is going to be refocused to what the Fed's going to do. So how they're going to play it. So when we look at maybe the strength or the lack of strength with employment or ISM or possibly the trade balance, well, a lot of that is just going to be brought forward to, okay, we got that number. What is the Fed going to do with it? How is the Fed going to react? Is it going to be another two times or three times they're going to raise? Is this going to be beneficial for us keeping a lid on potential rate hikes, or is it going to be potentially, you know, even more? So this is going to be the discussion that you're going to see throughout the week. So then the question then remains, from what we've discussed all the way up until now, from everything we've talked about on this last number of minutes with regard to the sentiment change, rotation, volatility, headlines, and this week coming, where do we go from here? Could it be that, well, the volatility is over and it's back to smooth sailing and, hey, there we go. We're just back to where that was. It was a couple months of craziness and then there we go, back to normal. Maybe. I don't think so. Something has definitely changed in the market sentiment and investor sentiment and how they're approaching things. Remember, it was for some time and throughout the entire 2017, it was buy the dip no matter what happened, no matter how shallow or how deep it was. It was just buy the dip, kind of just, you know, robotically just buy the dip. And we saw these V patterns just develop, right? You kind of came down a little bit, and then not only would they buy the dip, but it just shoot right back up and even to new highs. But now we seem to be in a reverse of that. It seems like there's more of a sell the rip. Buy the dip, sell the rip. And if you think about it, it looks and it feels like there's some players that are looking to get out of key positions and probably have treated them pretty well over the last number of years. And they're looking to take some profits. And that's what's impacting markets. Now, there is clearly some days that the action is very constructive, and on some days it's very destructive. And technicals are playing a major role in this. The S&P 500, I've been harping on this for a while. I've been looking at the 50, the 100, and the 200-day moving average. If you've heard me talking about this or you've seen my tweets on this, I've been sending up charts. I've been looking at this. And why? Because it's very clear. There's really not a lot that's changing the fundamental backdrop. So if there's nothing happening that really changed on a fundamental basis, something else has to be at play. And so what is it? Well, the technicals we look at. And clearly we broke through the 50 and then we kind of moved above it. And then it was resistance. It was support. It was resistance. It was support. Then we came down to the 100. Then now we popped off the second time since February off of a low of the 200-day moving average. That 200-day moving average on the S&P 500 appears to be very important support at this point. We're still pretty close to that level right now. So the 200-day moving average is really a demarcation point. If it drops below there's going to be a lot of players that take the cards off the table. They kind of put it in a bag and say, you know what? I'm going home for a little while. I know of strategies that if you dip below the 200-day moving average on a close of, let's say it's a weekly or maybe even monthly, that you know what? They take their money, they take it out of the market, they wait 6 months, and then they'll invest back in if, in fact, we then are over the 200-day moving average. It's just the way they do it. So you got to remember that there is more than just what the daily action is doing. And possibly, you know, there is some other strategies that are at work here that are actually causing some kind of derailment in markets because they have automatic requirements based on how they invest. NASDAQ, one of the Qs, the triple Qs, are looking at 100-day moving average as resistance right now. 200-day moving average clearly is support, but that's a bit lower. So there's a bit, if it breaks down to that level, there's going to be probably another 4% or so downside. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is right in between the 100 and the 200-day moving average. It's pretty much in no man's land. Could break either way. I wouldn't be surprised at all on the Dow Jones Industrial Average. And, with some of the weighting of the Dow Jones, how it's weighted, and this is a non-market cap weighted, it's a price-weighted index. Some people say outdated, no use in this at all, but it's still there. Something we need to pay attention to. It's only 30 stocks, it's not broad-based. We know that too. But because it is a dollar or price-weighted index, it could have some additional volatility as we've seen recently. Because some of the names that have high prices that haven't split and they move around, well, that really takes a lot of points and moves those points around pretty significantly. So the 200-day moving average, again, on the S&P 500, I think very important. The Qs, again, 100-day, these move much quicker. The NASDAQ moves a lot quicker, as you've seen. And it seems some pretty good downside recently. And we'll see if this is after Friday's reversal, a new month, a new quarter. Oftentimes you see pension plans and some institutions pushing money into the markets in the beginning of the quarter. We have earnings just about 10 days away, the start of earnings season. So all these things are going to play into some of the volatility and some of the next trend that we can latch onto. But I think the technicals are an important and a key area that we really need to pay attention to right now until we see something change in the fundamentals that we could put our finger on and say, that's maybe what's going on here. Possibly a significant change in trade with the tariffs if they actually go into a trade war. That's something that I think people are putting their finger on. And then we're then relaying that to the technicals. But the technicals are holding up because there's a lot of people that look at those as, again, levels that you want to start getting involved in. So just keep that in mind for individual names as well. Watch where you are in some of these. That's a simplistic view, very simplistic view of the technicals. We like to use a volume at price. It's a much better way of looking at things. We could see actually where the buying is. But the problem is we also know that institutions, while they use that kind of formulation, they also use these moving averages as just an easy, no-brainer way of when they're investing, when they're not. And that's why you see that, because when a lot of money goes into this and where they defend certain levels, that's where you see that there's a turn oftentimes. So, resistance becomes support, support becomes resistance. You have to look on what side of the lines you're on, whatever lines that you're looking at. But again, I'm just looking at these because they seem to be playing out pretty well with regard to key resistance and support for these major indices right now. Some people do some crazy things, like they'll use I've seen, taking a stock and throwing like a 27-week moving average, and that's where the stock keeps on bouncing off of. I mean, that's possible. I think it's retrofitting. I like to use the ones that it seems to be that most are using on a regular basis because there's no magic here. It's just that we know others are using this and they are using this as their line in the sand to either get out or get in or defend. And therefore, why not stay around with where the money's flowing from or to? It just makes sense. All right, we're going to close it up here again on a beginning of a brand new quarter, brand new month of April. If you have any discussion that you'd like to bring up, any questions that you'd like to maybe get answered on the show, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. A little button on the top says Ask Andrew. Just ask your question and we'll either answer it directly or put it on the show. Make sure to listen to DH Unplugged each and every Tuesday night, 9 o'clock, or just grab it. That's a fun show. I think you'd enjoy it. If you haven't listened to it, you really should listen to it. I think it's a lot of fun. We spent a lot of time talking about some real good business subjects as well as some of the outskirts. You'll see. When you listen, you'll understand what I'm talking about. Other than that, if you want to check out all the various strategies over on the Discipline Investor, just go over to the Discipline Investor, check out all there is on there. Videos on there to see what's going on with the walkthrough of the TDI Managed Growth Strategy. There's some information on the global allocations, Investology, all that's on there. Until next week, I bid you adieu. Have a great Passover, great Easter. All the best to you and yours, your family, and everybody that you love. I'll see you soon. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.